Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to preview the questions that are printed in the test booklet. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. If you want to, you may take notes in your booklet as you listen. Mark your answers on the separate answer sheet, not in the test booklet. You should mark A, B, or C. Do you have any questions? Look at the questions. Then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
Centuries ago, the people of Europe believed the cold, dark winter was caused by devils. So when they saw the signs of spring, they had cause to celebrate. Today, the old spring celebrations of the past have morphed into carnival. Eddie Davis tells us more about European carnivals.
Well, carnival is celebrated in different ways in different places around Europe. In Nice, in the south of France, people parade through the main street. At the head of the parade are noble ladies holding yellow flowers. After them come the musical bands, the musicians of which wear large masks and play the theme music of the year's carnival. Following them is a large float on which is seated an effigy of the Winter King wearing a gold crown. Spectators throw ticker tape and cheer. At night, the figure of the Winter King is set ablaze on the beach. Then the people of Nice celebrate the arrival of spring.
The famous carnival in Venice doesn't actually have a parade, does it?
Well, no, which is something quite different, but under the streetlights, people enjoy themselves into the small hours. Toward the end of winter, the mists from the northern Alps come into Venice, cloaking it in an eerie fog. On carnival days, crowds of people in fancy dress and wearing exotic masks descend on Piazza San Marco. There are so many people that the canal city seems to sink under their weight. My guest, Susan James, will tell us about three of the world's biggest carnivals.
Thanks, Eddie. The chilliest carnival of all is the Winter Carnival of Quebec, Canada, where the temperature plummets to minus 30 degrees Celsius. During carnival, there is a snow castle and a snow amusement park for children. There are also snow and ice sculptures displayed along the main thoroughfare. A snow queen is selected, and she parades on an illuminated float. For extra fun, people also have snowball fights in their swimsuits. In stark contrast to Quebec, carnival takes place under bright sunshine for the Brazilians. The Carnival of Rio de Janeiro is renowned the world over. It takes the form of a competition between hundreds of samba dance schools. But victory doesn't solely depend on dancing. Music, costumes, and the originality of the theme of the float all play a role in the judges' decision. Hundreds of dancers from each school parade and dance along a half-mile stretch of road for 90 minutes. All of the music played is samba, the spirit of Brazil.
Quite different from the carnival here in New Orleans, right, Susan?
That's right, Eddie. Mardi Gras in New Orleans is the best-known carnival celebration in the U.S. Its origins go back to the days of the wealthy plantation owners who rode on floats and threw money and jewels to the poor people of the town. These days, thousands of people ride on floats and parade the streets. As they do so, they throw fake jewels to the spectators in memory of the older tradition. Throughout the duration of carnival, more and more people wear the fake jewels and even decorate their cars and pets with them.
Now you will hear the segment again.
Centuries ago, the people of Europe believed the cold, dark winter was caused by devils. So when they saw the signs of spring, they had cause to celebrate. Today, the old spring celebrations of the past have morphed into carnival. Eddie Davis tells us more about European carnivals.
Well, carnival is celebrated in different ways in different places around Europe. In Nice, in the south of France, people parade through the main street. At the head of the parade are noble ladies holding yellow flowers. After them come the musical bands, the musicians of which wear large masks and play the theme music of the year's carnival. Following them is a large float on which is seated an effigy of the Winter King wearing a gold crown. Spectators throw ticker tape and cheer. At night, the figure of the Winter King is set ablaze on the beach. Then the people of Nice celebrate the arrival of spring.
The famous carnival in Venice doesn't actually have a parade, does it?
Well, no, which is something quite different, but under the streetlights, people enjoy themselves into the small hours. Toward the end of winter, the mists from the northern Alps come into Venice, cloaking it in an eerie fog. On carnival days, crowds of people in fancy dress and wearing exotic masks descend on Piazza San Marco. There are so many people that the canal city seems to sink under their weight. My guest, Susan James, will tell us about three of the world's biggest carnivals.
Thanks, Eddie. The chilliest carnival of all is the Winter Carnival of Quebec, Canada, where the temperature plummets to minus 30 degrees Celsius. During carnival, there is a snow castle and a snow amusement park for children. There are also snow and ice sculptures displayed along the main thoroughfare. A snow queen is selected, and she parades on an illuminated float. For extra fun, people also have snowball fights in their swimsuits. In stark contrast to Quebec, carnival takes place under bright sunshine for the Brazilians. The Carnival of Rio de Janeiro is renowned the world over. It takes the form of a competition between hundreds of samba dance schools. But victory doesn't solely depend on dancing. Music, costumes, and the originality of the theme of the float all play a role in the judges' decision. Hundreds of dancers from each school parade and dance along a half-mile stretch of road for 90 minutes. All of the music played is samba, the spirit of Brazil.
Quite different from the carnival here in New Orleans, right, Susan?
That's right, Eddie. Mardi Gras in New Orleans is the best-known carnival celebration in the U.S. Its origins go back to the days of the wealthy plantation owners who rode on floats and threw money and jewels to the poor people of the town. These days, thousands of people ride on floats and parade the streets. As they do so, they throw fake jewels to the spectators in memory of the older tradition. Throughout the duration of carnival, more and more people wear the fake jewels and even decorate their cars and pets with them.
Number 39. What does Eddie Davis say about the carnival celebration in Nice? Number 40. What does Eddie Davis say about the Venice Carnival? Number 41. What does Susan James say about the carnival in Quebec? Number 42. Which carnival is basically a competition? Number 43. According to Susan James, what might a spectator at Mardi Gras receive? Number 44. What is the main purpose of this report? Look at the questions. Then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
The inventions of some American women are still in use in today's world. In order to protect their creations from theft, patents were issued to them. Leo Fraser from the U.S. Patent Office and our resident expert Janine Carlson report. Leo, you first.
Thank you. The first U.S. patent issued to a woman was in 1809 to Mary Dixon Keyes, a native of Connecticut, who invented a technique for weaving straw with silk or thread. So popular was this technique that First Lady Dolly Madison praised Keyes for boosting America's hat industry. Keyes' patent file, unfortunately, was destroyed in 1836 when the patent office was engulfed in flames. Until 1840, only a further 20 patents were issued to women for inventions relating to cooking stoves, apparel, tools, and fireplaces. From 1845 onwards, patents were issued to women in respect of their inventions of safety equipment and communication systems, all of which were successfully implemented in wartime against the enemy. In 1845, Sarah Mather patented her invention of a submarine telescope and lamp, which enabled seagoing vessels to survey the ocean depths. Janine, tell us about some of the communication systems invented for use during the war.
Well, Leo, Martha Costum, the wife of a former naval scientist, found a rough sketch of a pyrotechnic flare in a diary of plans after her husband's death. She perfected his idea, developing it into an intricate system of flares. These night signals allowed for night message communication between ships. The U.S. Navy subsequently bought patent rights to the flares. Costum's invention as a system of communication saved many lives and helped to win many battles during the war. George Antheil, a composer, helped American actress Hedy Lamarr to invent a secret communication system which was to help the Allies defeat the Germans in World War II. The invention manipulated radio frequencies between transmission and reception, producing an unbreakable code. The invention, patented in 1941, allowed the exchange of highly confidential messages without interception by the enemy.
Margaret Knight received her first patent at the age of 30, and during the course of her life received 26 patents in total. Her first inventions were created at a young age, when she made kites and sleds for her brothers. At the age of 12, Knight developed an idea she had for a stop-motion device that could be used in the textile mills to shut down machinery, thereby eliminating injury to the mill workers. Another of her inventions was a machine that made flat-bottom paper bags, which is still in use today.
Anne Moore's design of a baby carrier was patented in 1969 and today is as popular as it was then, promoting a closeness between baby and parent. While volunteering in French West Africa, Moore observed how the women carried their babies securely on their backs. She admired this bonding technique between African mother and baby, and so designed the carrier to emulate this closeness on her return to her own country for when she had a baby.
Now you will hear the segment again.
The inventions of some American women are still in use in today's world. In order to protect their creations from theft, patents were issued to them. Leo Fraser from the U.S. Patent Office and our resident expert Janine Carlson report. Leo, you first.
Thank you. The first U.S. patent issued to a woman was in 1809 to Mary Dixon Keyes, a native of Connecticut, who invented a technique for weaving straw with silk or thread. So popular was this technique that First Lady Dolly Madison praised Keyes for boosting America's hat industry. Keyes' patent file, unfortunately, was destroyed in 1836 when the patent office was engulfed in flames. Until 1840, only a further 20 patents were issued to women for inventions relating to cooking stoves, apparel, tools, and fireplaces. From 1845 onwards, patents were issued to women in respect of their inventions of safety equipment and communication systems, all of which were successfully implemented in wartime against the enemy. In 1845, Sarah Mather patented her invention of a submarine telescope and lamp, which enabled seagoing vessels to survey the ocean depths. Janine, tell us about some of the communication systems invented for use during the war.
Well, Leo, Martha Costum, the wife of a former naval scientist, found a rough sketch of a pyrotechnic flare in a diary of plans after her husband's death. She perfected his idea, developing it into an intricate system of flares. These night signals allowed for night message communication between ships. The U.S. Navy subsequently bought patent rights to the flares. Costin's invention as a system of communication saved many lives and helped to win many battles during the war. George Antheil, a composer, helped American actress Hedy Lamarr to invent a secret communication system which was to help the Allies defeat the Germans in World War II. The invention manipulated radio frequencies between transmission and reception, producing an unbreakable code. The invention, patented in 1941, allowed the exchange of highly confidential messages without interception by the enemy.
Margaret Knight received her first patent at the age of 30, and during the course of her life received 26 patents in total. Her first inventions were created at a young age, when she made kites and sleds for her brothers. At the age of 12, Knight developed an idea she had for a stop-motion device that could be used in the textile mills to shut down machinery, thereby eliminating injury to the mill workers. Another of her inventions was a machine that made flat-bottom paper bags, which is still in use today.
Anne Moore's design of a baby carrier was patented in 1969 and today is as popular as it was then, promoting a closeness between baby and parent. While volunteering in French West Africa, Moore observed how the women carried their babies securely on their backs. She admired this bonding technique between African mother and baby, and so designed the carrier to emulate this closeness on her return to her own country for when she had a baby.
Number 45. Which industry was aided by the first patent issued to a woman? Number 46. What does Leo Frazier say about Sarah Mather? Number 47. What did Hedy Lamarr invent? Number 48. What did Leo Frazier say about Margaret Knight's safety invention? Number 49. According to Janine Carlson, how did Anne Moore get the idea for her invention? Number 50. What is the main purpose of the report? End of the listening test.